The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the program today Meredith Dench. Her new novel is Never Say Die. She joins on the telephone from somewhere in the Miami Valley. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Vic. Thanks so much for having me.
Meredith, we've had you on before, and you have this career as a novelist, and I want to know how it's going.
Oh, that's a good question to start out with. How is it going? It's going. It's steady. It's been harder, I think, with this novel than my last one to find opportunities for things to do for the book. Not sure exactly what that's about, but, you know, I know publishing is kind of going through a period right now of a downturn, and hopefully we'll hit an upswing soon, but I'm hanging in there and I'm still writing. This is the fifth book I've written. I'm working on the sixth. So, yeah.
When you say a downturn, what do you mean, and how does that impact you? Because most of our listeners don't follow the publishing industry. What's going on?
We go through periods of where, you know, things are really booming and, you know, publishers are buying books like crazy. And then we hit these times where they're more leery about buying books and things kind of slow down a little bit. And we seem to be in that period of kind of like things are backing off a little bit. And I don't know, there's lots of theories out there. A lot of it has to do with, you know, Trump being in the White House and DEI regulations and, you know, publishers just worrying about what's going to actually sell and what's not going to sell. So I don't know. I just think I don't know if there's any one reason other than maybe publishers are just worrying a little bit about what's actually going to sell, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm just picturing the typical consumer out there saying to themselves, okay, do I buy the new book by Meredith Dench, or do I put several gallons of gas in my car?
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's a very real scenario of what people are going through. Yeah.
Okay.
That's why we have public libraries, which are great and wonderful. You know, and I know I've been using my public library a lot more in this last couple of years for books. So.
Well, we love our libraries.
Yeah.
They are so precious.
Support
your libraries, everybody out there. Go out there and tell them Meredith and Vic sent you. And we want you to go out there and we want you to use your libraries. There was a great article in the paper in the Dayton Daily News just this week about the director of the Tipp City Public Library and how they're doing things up there. And Tipp is one of our library underwriters here on the Book Nook. And Meredith, I'm wondering, how did you get the idea for this particular story?
Oh, well, I got to tell you, this one's been brewing for a long time. All the way back from when I was in grad school, I lived in West Texas. I was going to Texas Tech University, and I heard about this amazing group called Texas EcuSearch that's out of Houston, and they are the people that come in after the police have exhausted all of their funds for the searching for missing people. Like once the case has gone cold and the police, you know, have really put all their efforts and money into it, then this group comes in and supports the family of whoever's missing and really works hard to continue the search. So I went down huge rabbit holes with this. I was really into this. And so I wanted to write a book that had a main character that was a lot like the person who started this Texas EcuSearch. His name's Tim Miller, and the real person is named Tim Miller. And he started this because his own daughter was missing for many years. And then eventually when her body was found, she had been murdered. And they traced it back to the Texas Killing Fields murders, which were a really huge situation in Texas that was also very fascinating to me and very sad. So when I was writing this book, this is kind of how it started. I just kept really, like, was really fascinated with how they did these searches with so little money. And the push behind it, which was this guy's daughter. So in my version of it, it came out as a mother. In my book, her name is Frankie Armitage, and her daughter has been missing for 6 years. And she was taken at the age of six. So that's kind of how this sort of turned in here, with her continuing to search. It was heartbreaking to me to read about Tim Miller and the way that everything in his life just completely stopped when his daughter was taken. He talked a lot about, like, losing his job, losing his marriage, and everything just became about him searching every single day, all day, for his daughter. And so that's kind of what I was using as my template, I guess, for Frankie Armitage. She, you know, figured out ways to work at home so that she could be home in case her daughter called or came home, you know, like things like that. So that was really like the beginning of it. And then I started thinking about a lot about missing persons cases in general. And so I went down huge rabbit holes for this, but about how people who abduct young kids tend to like feel the need to take another younger person once that child becomes old enough. And so I started to kind of plan a little bit of like a pattern that a person might be working with who's abducting kids. This was a hard one to write. I don't think I'm going to write any more abductions of children again, because this was really rough. So that was sort of the basis of it. Yeah.
You tell this from several points of view, and I guess our primary one is Detective Rory Scott. And we also get Frankie's point of view. And we also have a point of view from someone who's helping the perpetrator out, which is really a kind of a bizarre, creepy point of view. But we sort of feel sympathetic for this person after a while who's given us this point of view, because this is a messed up situation. Do we have common occurrences of people replacing children like in this story?
Yeah, well, actually, that's what I found. I mean, this was really fascinating to me, but I also think it put me in a real depression to realize so much of this goes on in our world. The two big cases that I really examined closely, I really got into the story of Sean Hornbeck, who lived in Missouri, and he was taken when he was around 11 or 12, I believe. And he lived with his abductor for a few years and didn't really do much to try to escape. He just sort of accepted what things were. And it wasn't until his abductor decided that he'd gotten too old and needed to take a younger boy and bring a younger boy into this, that Sean decided, no way, this is not going to happen to another kid. And so when the new kid came in, the two of them sort of devised a plan to try to get out. There's also the really famous one that I studied. This one was Stephen Stainer, and this was in the 70s in California. They made a movie out of that one called My Name is Stephen, which when I've talked about that, a lot of people recognize that from, you know, the 80s, that movie version of it. But he was also another one. He lived for many years with his abductor. And I mean, he even went to school and he had opportunities. You know, we could talk about different kinds of opportunities to leave, but he didn't until his abductor decided that Stephen had gotten too old and that they needed to bring in a young boy. And so that was another situation where Stephen was like, nope, we're not doing this to another kid. And so as soon as that kid came in, it started the planning of how to get away.
It sounds like there's elements of Stockholm syndrome in there as well.
I know, yeah. When I
meant replacement, though, I guess what I meant was, in this particular situation, there's been a tragedy where the initial abduction was a result of trying to replace the real child who died.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah, I, you know, the ones that I read about and really looked into didn't, it was not because a person actually had a child who died. It was more, they just wanted a kid, you know?
Well, this person who is doing these abductions, wow, this is like a really dark character. Good work, yeah. Meredith. I mean, this is pretty convincing. And you set this in a fictional Ohio county, but I'm guessing from your notes that it's kind of based on an area near here.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Originally, I planned to, set it in Waynesville, and I mean, in my head, that's what it had always been. Around Caesars Creek was really what I was working with, was the area of the lake and stuff. So, in the end, though, we just decided to make it a fictional town. But, yeah, it was definitely like around Caesars Creek area.
Is there a reason why you prefer to be fictional?
This one was just so dark that I didn't really want to put this into, like, you know, a town's name. Most of my work is dark, I will say that. But I have to say that this one really took a toll on my mental health, and I just, you know, I didn't really want to put that onto a town. And also too, like, it just felt like it could be, this is one that could be a fantastical town, you know, type of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's different elements to our Waynesville, the real Waynesville, you know, like there's places that are very populated, and then there, you know, around Caesars Creek, it's not so much. And then we have the state park out there too. So, it just made more sense, I think, from this one to be a fictionalized town.
You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, connecting our community through news, music, and storytelling on the air and online. Tell us about Rory Scott. Who is Rory? And tell us about her setup, her life, how she ended up as a cop in this small town.
So Rory is... Yeah, so Rory first got into wanting to be a police officer or going into law because when there was the first initial abduction of a six-year-old in this town, and a body of a teen was sort of left in place of the six-year-old, then Rory's, it wasn't her stepdad just yet, it was someone who would become her stepdad. His mother's partner was tied at least through the town. Like, everyone in town sort of thought that he could have had something to do with this. And the police never had enough to hold him, never enough to arrest him. But that talk in town and the way that people reacted to her really made a huge impact. And eventually, her mother chooses to side with this guy, and eventually they get married, and Rory and her mother split so that there's no real contact for almost, you know, a few years they hadn't had contact with each other. So it was a really big moment in her life that made her decision of where she was going to go next. So she, at the start of this book, she is a younger detective who has been working in this small town at... in the back of her head, I think the whole reason why she's there is she wants to solve this crime that's never been solved. She's also just really a go-getter. Like, she wants to do well in her career and do as much good as she can. But that's who Rory is. She has a partner named Cade, who is a chef at one of the local restaurants, who is very, like, you know, creative with cooking and all of that. And they're building a life together. And they're also in this small town, they're also one of the only queer relationships that people, like, that are out and people see. That's her life. And when the book starts, you know, it's pretty quick into the book that she gets a call that there's a six-year-old that's missing. And that starts this off, and she knows there's just too many connections to the past case to think it's anything different. So, yeah.
And one element in this that I picked up on was that Rory doesn't really get the respect that she deserves from her boss. No. And Cade is in the same kind of situation.
Yeah, they both are sort of pushed to the sideline. And in particular, I think Cade takes it a little bit more personally than Rory does. Rory sort of figures out ways to work around her boss. And she teams up, eventually she teams up with Frankie, the mother of a missing child, to continue to investigate and look for clues into this case. And they're actually the ones who end up, you know, they become incredibly vital to it. But Cade takes it very personally that this place that she's worked for so long, she was hoping so hard that she was going to become like the head chef, and then she's pushed aside for a relative who doesn't have as much experience as her and probably isn't as good as her at a job, but gets it because of, you know, blood relations. So, yeah.
Okay.
They're similar in a lot of ways.
And Frankie, the mother of Savannah, who's missing, who's been missing for about 6 years, according to my math.
Yep.
Frankie is such a great character, and she's kind of written off as the crazy mother of this missing girl. She's kind of considered to be a problem, and yet she's been doing all of her own detective work, and she knows what she's doing.
She does. She absolutely does. Yeah. It's just sheer determination from her part, you know, if she's going to find this kid, her kid. But yeah, she is sort of, someone that people might consider to not be the most attentive mother, or, you know, maybe like another interviewer mentioned that she could be considered a bad mother. I don't know if I'd go that far with it, but I do think that, you know, she has some qualms in the way that she is dealing with things in her life. She's living with her own parents at the time when her daughter is taken. She's a single mom. She's struggling in a lot of different ways to figure out how to make money and what to do to support her and her daughter. And when this abduction happens, it stops her whole life and changes everything for her. She's a really good example of someone who loses everything when her daughter is taken too, like just like Tim Miller. Her parents eventually die, natural causes, but there's a lot of grief involved with that. And it's like time just kind of stops for Frankie. But yeah, she continues to go to the police station, continues to contact them regularly, and they simply just don't have any new information. I think it's more that she's a reminder of what they can't fix for her. And she's also loud. So, you know, like she goes to press or anybody who will listen to her, really. So they feel like she makes them look very bad. So
they've had what's essentially a cold case. They don't have any clues. And then suddenly another abduction happens and another dead teenager turns up like a pattern. And the media is on it. The police are on it. Frankie is really on it because, of course, she assumes that this dead teen is Savannah.
Yeah. Yeah. So she's incredibly motivated to try to find out what's going on here. Yeah.
The book is Never Say Die by Meredith Dench. And I don't think we've really revealed. I think a lot of listeners are probably assuming that this perpetrator is a guy. Have we revealed anything about the identity of this perpetrator? I don't think we have we?
We have not, but we can. She's a mother who lost her own child. And so, I mean, one of the taglines that we came up with for the book, like the single sentence one or whatever, was like, not all women should be mothers, you know, like kind of thinking about her. And she's very controlling. These kids are kept inside. There's lots of locks on the windows, everything that, you know, they never get to go outside, but they have free roam of the house. But she's the one who's directing everything that they're reading, watching, hearing, eating. Every minute of their day is directed by this person, even though she has the ability to leave and go to work. They know that someone is outside watching them, even when she's gone. So they're under control all the time.
And we get the point of view of the Watcher.
The Watcher, yeah. Yeah.
That's a great character, the Watcher.
I know. He was so fun to write. He was really great. And I felt very bad for him. I mean, I grew to really care about him and to really understand that how hurt he had been and how his life had been so damaged from her and, you know, everything that had happened with her.
Yeah, that's kind of a tearjerker to see him in that situation. But poor Savannah.
Yeah.
The viewpoint we get of what's going on with her and her struggle to try to decide what she's going to do, and she's plotting. How is she going to escape? How is she going to trick this demented woman who's holding her prisoner? How is she going to help her and this recent abductee to escape? And she's got this weird thing where she changes their names, and they're all like the same letter of the alphabet. This is so creepy, Meredith.
It is. Yeah. So can you see how this kind of like affected me a little bit while I was writing it? I mean, I'm not going to do any more child abduction.
Okay. Well, at the end of this one, there was a big life change for Rory and Cade. And it made me wonder, are we going to encounter them again in some completely different city?
Well, that's funny you ask, because I am currently working on the next book in this series. So, yeah, they will definitely be back. And they are, in this particular book, they're brought back to this town for a visit, and things go awry is how it's going to go. So they will be coming back to this town.
Okay. And you strike me as someone who prefers the series format. Is that true?
Yeah, I do. I do. I really like to see how the main characters sort of, I mean, in a book, they have a lot of time and space to grow and change. But I think that when you have a series, it's amazing how much they can change and how many different aspects of their life you can really examine. So, yeah, I prefer to write in series, for sure.
And do you have a favorite series or a number of favorite series that you really dig?
Yeah, what got me interested in queer crime writing and just in general was Catherine V. Forrest's series. I can't even remember how many were in that series, but she did a really good job of like bringing her detective character through a lot. I mean, a more current one that I really am fascinated with is J.M. Redmond. I bet she's got maybe up to 10, 12 books in her series now. So those are ones that I read, but there's a lot. I mean, series are really the thing now, you know, so there's a lot of series out there that really help us get to know the character. And then the character almost becomes like our friend, like we know them so well, you know, or we feel like we know them so well. So, yeah, I think I'm really drawn to that for sure.
And I'm going to guess maybe that this genre encourages readers to reach out and contact the authors maybe a little bit more than your typical series?
Yeah, I do get a lot of contacts. A lot of people have contacted me about characters, and in particular with this book, I've gotten some contact from people who are, you know, saying like, have said things like, it's good to see representation of, you know, lesbian or queer characters who are isolated or in rural settings rather than bigger cities, you know. And so that's been a good thing to hear that, like, at least I wouldn't say I live in Dayton, so I wouldn't say I'm not definitely not in a smaller space but or a smaller city, but I did want to be sure that I felt real and correct that, you know, how they were represented in a rural area.
Okay. The book is Never Say Die by Meredith Dench, who has joined us on the program today. And Meredith, I know what your day job is. You just mentioned you're in Dayton, and we probably have some listeners out there going, is that the same Meredith Dench? Do you want to talk at all about your day job? If not, that's fine with me.
Oh, no, it's fine. We can talk about my day job. Yeah, I teach at the University of Dayton in the English department. I mostly teach creative writing and literature. So I have a really great job. I love my job so much.
And do you have students who will say, tell me about your career as a writer. How do I become a writer?
Oh, yeah. So many of them want to know how to become a writer, but I'm laughing because, no, they don't really want to know about my career as a writer or what I do. It's interesting because a lot of people assume that students are going to want to hear about that, but they don't. They want to know how they can make it. And they, you know, and we do talk about, you know, things that have happened to me along the way as a writer, but yeah, we definitely don't focus on me and my career, but there's a lot of people out there who really want to be a writer. And I love that I can help them see a path forward into that.
And what do you tell them the path is?
You got to write. You got to write. That's the one thing that I think most people don't want to hear, right? But that's the, you got to have something down on, you got to have something down so that then you can start working with it. And getting that thing down is the hardest thing, you know? And so I kind of see myself more as like a cheerleader in teaching, you know, because, you know, our semesters are 15 weeks or 16 weeks, you know? And so at first everybody's super excited and they're ready to go. You know, by the time we hit like week 8, week 10, it's like, oh, this is hard, you know? And so that's, you know, that's the part where I feel like I have to come in and be the person who cheers them on and just keep going, keep trying. And so, yeah, I kind of see it that way.
Well, I have met so many people over the years who had that dream of writing the great American novel, and almost all of them never wrote anything.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the things that I just recently taught a novel writing class, and one of the things that we talk about in that is you're going to meet people all along the way who tell you they want to write a novel, but very few of them will actually have sat down and tried to work through that first draft, and you guys have, you know, so that's something, yeah, we talk about a lot.
Mm-hmm. Just stare at that page and actually put something on it.
Right.
Well, Meredith, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My guest has been Meredith Dench. Her new one is Never Say Die. And it's got really one of the creepiest villains that I've encountered over the years. And I've met quite a few creepy villains on the pages of books. And this particular one who likes to be called Amma, she just, is it Amma?
Yeah.
Amma.
Yeah.
She just made my skin crawl, and just imagining that a person like this could exist, it made me kind of almost physically revolted. But she's a great character. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Stay tuned. More great radio coming your way right here on WYSO.